everybody. Welcome to Scooping the Texas Rangers on a Monday afternoon edition after a layoff of a couple of days, and I'll have to apologize for not being around, but trust me, friends take precedence, and a big shout-out to Seth and Allison Oswald, who had their first son, Dylan Robert, as we all got to be there at the hospital, and welcome the newest member of the Wolfpack into the family. But for a Monday afternoon edition, we're hearing a whole lot of things, and a lot of the Dallas radio stations wanted to talk about football. We're not here to talk about football because they force-fed that down our throats, and I'm kind of tired of hearing it, at least for today. But joining me, my co-host today, a former Fox Sports Southwest blogger and a Rangers guy, Eddie Middlebrook. We want to talk a little bit about the Texas Rangers. And you and I have been talking all day long on Twitter, and there have been so many deals laid out there. And the one you and I just talked about before we went on the air was a deal for Ubaldo Jimenez from Colorado. Now, the three names that I brought up to you, and I'll bring it up to fans, and fans can tell us if they want to make this deal. Martin Perez, Tanner Shepherds, and Luis Sardinas for one Ubaldo Jimenez. Now, Eddie, you and I kind of sat there and went, you know, do we do that deal? But you know what? I would do that deal, wouldn't you?
I would have to after thinking about it and chewing on it just for a few minutes. But Jimenez is locked up for the next couple years. Very, a workable contract, like what's $5 to $7 million a year. He has ace type stuff. Has he been down a little bit this year? Yes, but he's definitely up there, and he can provide that. Not only is he here for the playoffs, and would work out great, but then you have him for next year if you lose CJ.
Well, and Ubaldo Jimenez is a guy that you can probably put. If you're asking me right now, I mean, if you make that deal, and to finish this off, this was a deal that John Daniels, the general manager of the Rangers, sent over to the Colorado Rockies, and they said absolutely not. And for one reason, it was for Martin Perez. They're not sold on this young man as a number one starter, and for good reason. But you're right. Ubaldo Jimenez is going to be a very cheap option over the next couple of years, and this was a guy that I was looking at because before I said yes, I said, okay, let me take a look at his contract. What does he have left? And then I could probably make a decision that's educated. Now, he's owed $4.2 million next season, $5.75 club option for 2013, and an $8 million club option for 2014. So really, you're only on the hook for $4.2 million next season. And if he plays well enough at the end of this season and all of next season, really, he's not that expensive to pick up, right?
No, he's not, and it goes to show you, and for the fans all out there, that trade rumors, a lot of times they're rumors in the sense that, you know, we heard that the top three, Leonis Martin, Yerkson Profar, and Martin Perez, they were untouchable. Well, you know, you got your sources, and they're saying that, this is what John Daniels slipped across the table with Martin Perez's name on it. I mean, nobody's truly untouchable.
Well, and Martin Perez is a guy that I don't think a lot of people – as far as in the Rangers organization are 100% sold on, because, and I don't think it's 100% fair. The kid's only 20 years old. So to really expect him to light the world on fire at 20 years old, I think is asking too much, don't you?
It is. I saw him in his home debut last week during Round Rock, and like you said, he's young. He gets emotional on the mound when the defense behind him makes mistakes, and they were making quite a few mistakes on that particular day. And but he touches 95 miles per hour. He's consistently 91 to 93. He's got a nasty changeup and a decent curveball. So and he's left-handed, so that makes even that much more valuable. But obviously, the Colorado's doesn't want to have anything to do with him.
Well, just staying on Jimenez for right now, this is a guy that you could probably put behind C.J. Wilson and Alexi Ogando, and probably in front of Colby Lewis, right?
Oh yeah, he's I guess stats-wise this year he would be behind Alexi, but he has way more skins on the wall than Ogando does, and he comes in as he's your number two. Rangers, I know they don't look at him as a bona fide ace. I read that on Twitter, I think, yesterday. And so he definitely right there with Lewis and Wilson as long as experience. But
well, here's the question that it brings up, because the conversations that you and I have heard is the conversation centered around Alexi Ogando as far as, do you keep him in the rotation or do you put him back in the bullpen? Now, if you bring in Jimenez, you have a decision whether you put Derek Holland, Matt Harrison, or Alexi Ogando. Now, a lot of people are going to say move Ogando back to the bullpen. That's where he was last year. He was a guy that really helped you out right in front of Neftali Feliz. And right now, the Rangers don't really have that eighth inning setup, man.
That's true. I've been all for it would be PR-wise, I don't know how it would go over with Ranger fans, but moving Ogando right back to the eighth inning, and that takes care of two things. You get if you were to say get Jimenez, give the Rockies the package they want, you put Jimenez there in the rotation, you put Ogando in the eighth inning, and then you don't miss a beat. You've helped your bullpen out exponentially, and you still have Harrison and Holland in there, which Holland's inconsistent, but we'll see again tonight what he does.
Well, and that's you brought up a real good point, inconsistent, because I think that's a word that describes not only Holland but Harrison and Lewis as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh yeah, Harrison he struggled the other day, but he had been doing really good for the last 10 games, ERA under 2, I believe. But and Lewis has been getting back on track. But the season as a whole, all three of those guys has been inconsistent. But no one more than Holland. Holland's just you never know what you're going to get. He can look like an ace one day and then look like a number 5 starter the next.
Well, and, the argument against Holland and is really. I it makes sense to me, and I'm not going to argue against it, because he seems to beat the bad offenses out there. If you look at the starts that he has, like I believe one was against Seattle, and I forget what the other one was, where he had a complete game shutout. I think the other one was against Oakland. But the teams that he should at least show a little bit of fire, he's really struggled. Now, it seems to me with Holland is when he gets down, when he starts to struggle, he starts overthrowing his pitches, he starts walking hitters, he starts leaving pitches over the middle. And that really concerns me. If he doesn't have the mentality to calm himself down, you know, do you really keep trusting him to run out there, especially late in the season, if you only have a 3 or 4 game lead over Anaheim?
And that's just it. I've heard him on the radio and in multiple interviews talk about he knows he struggles with giving up the big inning. So if you know he's talking about that, and not only is he's talking about it to the public, you know it's inside his head, and that's all I can think about every time he goes out is, you know, he knows that the big inning's about to happen, and can he handle it? I just don't think he's mature enough yet, like you said, and I mean, that's why going out and getting a starting pitcher is real key for the playoffs, you know, for guys like Ogando and Harrison and Holland, who, you know, really have not been through the fire from a starting pitcher standpoint when it comes to the playoffs.
Well, and that begs the question, because with the trade deadline looming, and I believe it's just 5 days away, 6 days away, what do you do with Derek Holland? Is he a trade chip that you throw out there and see who takes interest in him?
Because what you're doing right now, you're almost at the crossroads. If you keep him, and because he has a higher ceiling, I believe, than Harrison does. I think a lot of people would agree with that. And if you ride him out and he works out, he can be a top 1-2 guy for you in the rotation here in a couple of years. But then if you don't go ahead and sell him now, you know, you risk the chance of him just kind of falling apart and pulling a Brandon McCarthy, you know, and next thing you know, what if he gets hurt or he's never heard of ever again? They're at a crossroads right now with him, and if the right deal came along, I would be for it. I would be much more for giving up Harrison, but it would have to be a Ubaldo kind of guy, maybe even above that. I know Kershaw and Felix are not really available, but if one of those kind of deals were to fall on your lap, then that's when I would go ahead and give up Holland.
But wouldn't Holland project as a guy who has a better upside than Harrison? Because if you look at Matt Harrison, yeah, he has solid games. He can rack up the strikeouts from 8 to 10. We've seen him go in the double-digit strikeouts. But Harrison, to me, is no better than a number 4 or number 5 starter, where all these teams that are looking to trade or looking to buy or looking to sell are looking for a number 1 or number 2 starter, and Harrison just doesn't fit that to me.
No, he doesn't have the ceiling, and there's been a few times when he has those strikeout numbers, but overall, I know that's one of the knocks from the sabermetric guys is he does not strike out that many guys, whereas, you know, you see Holland here, even when he has a rough start, he's still striking out 4 or 5 guys a lot of times, because that's how good his stuff is. I mean, when you see somebody what real hardcore baseball guys are looking for are swing and misses. How many of the times are they getting swing and misses? And that's what Holland brings to the table. Harrison does not.
Well, we're on the other side of the break. Eddie and I are going to break down some of the trade deadline rumors that we're hearing. Eddie's going to tell you who he thinks the Rangers need. I'll tell you who I think they need.
We'll argue, we'll disagree, we'll agree. But after the break, we'll get through all of that and much, much more. So stay tuned. This is Scooping the Texas Rangers. And to wrap this up real quick, Eddie, let's do this. You and I agree that this, the deal that was sent to Colorado, you and I would both do, correct?
Yes, we would.
Okay, now that being said, there are two names I want to throw out here, and you and I were talking before we came back from the break, and I told you these are two names that I've kind of been on the fence about until last night as I was talking to a good friend of mine, and this number came up, and I went, okay, I'm not interested anymore. And that name is Houston Astros starter Wandy Rodriguez. Now, the one reason that I'm no longer interested, you and I both know this, is he is owed $40 million if he's traded.
Oh, yeah, way too expensive, way too expensive.
But he is, I mean, can you see why I'd be interested, though? This guy can project, just like Jimenez can, a solid number two, number three starter. He's still young. He's a guy that you can control for another couple years or even re-sign. But $40 million on the books with Michael Young's contract already there, Josh Hamilton is probably going to be owed a big payday when he comes in free agency. That's just not a guy I don't think that you can afford, not only money-wise, but in prospect-wise.
Yeah, because, you know, most teams with some common sense would know that to have $40 million, then you're not going to be able to get the prospects you want. But from what I'm hearing, the Astros want way too many good prospects for him. I know he's consistent. Got, you know, got a solid mid-three ERA for the last 4 years, and he's got good numbers across the board, but just way too expensive in terms of prospects, not just money alone.
Well, if the Astros want prospects, and here's my thinking, and the same goes for Carlos Beltran, because the Mets have told teams that they will pick up the remaining $6 million on his contract if they can get prospects in return. Now, if I'm the Rangers and I'm looking at Rodriguez, I'm telling Houston, now, wait a minute. If you want top prospects, how are you expecting us to pay the other $40 million? Why won't you pick up at least half or three-quarters of that?
Yeah, I think if they want a Ubaldo Jimenez-type deal, what we were just talking about earlier, giving up a Perez or a Robbie Erlin, one of those kind of type prospects, then you have to eat half that contract. And we both know that the Astros ownership is not going to do that. They're wanting to cut the payroll. And they're not willing to eat that much money.
Well, another guy that had intrigued me for quite a while, and I talked to a source in Kansas City, and while he and I were talking, I just imagine him shaking his head as he's telling me all this, because Joakim Soria, the Kansas City Royals closer, is a guy that a lot of teams were after last year, and they're after again this year, and for good reason. He came into the season, he struggled, he lost his closer spot, he was in the eighth inning role, he's come back, he's pitched really, really well, and now the Royals are saying we're not even listening? And that doesn't make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. If you're in a position like the Royals, then you got to be able to willing to part with some guys. It's even somebody like Soria, who obviously has talent. Now it's been down a little bit this year, but you have to be willing to give up on some guys to be able to even bolster your farm system. I know they got one of the best farm systems out there, but there's a reason why they do, because they go ahead and get rid of the guys when they need to.
Well, I mean, I could see if you're Seattle and you're talking about King Felix, or you're Philadelphia, you're talking about Roy Halladay or Cliff Lee. I get that. I get telling teams absolutely not, we're not going to listen. But Joakim Soria is not even in that class. I mean, I'd even argue he's not even in the class of Heath Bell.
No, he doesn't put butts in the seats, and that's why Seattle's keeping Felix. I mean, I get why Seattle wants to keep Felix. He's got a huge fan base there. He's essentially their franchise player, but Soria is not like that for the Royals.
That just doesn't make sense. I mean, and I'm talking to this guy, and he's saying, I just don't understand why the Royals are telling teams, you can talk to us, but we're not giving him up. And I'm going, he's not that good. He's not good enough for the Royals to sit here and go, he is going to be the face of our franchise, because although they're not saying that, that's really what they're saying without saying it, right?
Oh yeah, they are, because what other logical reason to keep him? I mean, the Royals don't look like they're going to be contending in the next year or two. They might be several more years down the way, but there's just no reason to do what they're doing.
Well, another pitcher on the radar, and this guy's name has come up, and I for the life of me, Eddie, cannot wrap my head around this guy, but it's Hiroki Kuroda, the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, he has a full no trade clause, and when his name first came up, reports were that he did not want to go to an East Coast team. Well, now he's saying, I'm keeping my options open. Well, which is it?
We don't know, and the name Hiroki Kuroda, you know, for fans out there, if you really haven't been looking at his numbers, you know, that name is not sexy at all. It really isn't. And but I've looked at his numbers, and I'm starting to buy into him more and more each and every day. And I know the Rangers and supposedly the Red Sox and the Yankees are really going hard after him. So
But not only is he not sexy, but he's not a guy I want. I'll tell you why. This is a guy that pitches in the National League West who has some of the biggest pitcher's parks in baseball right along with Dodger Stadium. And say what you want about L.A., that ball does not fly to that ballpark. If you've ever been to Chavez Ravine, you'd know that. And another one is Petco Park, where fly balls go to die. I don't see him coming to the American League pitching against teams like Anaheim, like Toronto, like Kansas City, like the Yankees, like the Red Sox down the stretch and having success. Sure, he's had consistent, you know, mid-3 ERA, but he's doing this in the National League and doing it in a very weak offensive division.
Well, and I know, Todd, you're kind of still familiar, you're getting familiar with the Metroplex. I mean, I've been a Ranger fan for 20-something years, and when you think Dodgers pitcher coming over to the Rangers, the first thing that comes to mind is Chien Hoe Park.
Yeah.
And, man, I know that scares Rangers fans. But for the very same reasons why Heath Bell and Mike Adams, I'm a little hesitant about those kind of guys, is all the reasons you brought up. National League, you know, pitcher's park. I'm really not sold on any one of those guys.
No, I talked to a source earlier today who's, you know, kind of balked at me saying that, you know, he is a child of a, you know, a pitcher's park, and his numbers are, they won't hold up in American League Park, and of course he kind of poo-pooed me, and he likes the guy, and I don't. We're going to disagree, or we're agree to disagree, I should say. Uh-huh. And he's going to cost the Rangers as much as a Jimenez will. He's going to cost him as much as a Wandy Rodriguez would, except he's not going to cost him nearly as much in financial dollars, but he's going to cost him a whole heck of a lot in prospect. And with Kuroda, you're going to throw out a name like Perez. You're not going to get away from that. You're going to throw a name out like Shepherd. You're going to throw a name out like Robbie Erlin, who you told me earlier the Rangers really don't see a future with.
No, they don't. Robbie, he's the kind of guy that he's the hardest worker in the Rangers farm system. We've heard pitching coaches say that. But he's a fly ball pitcher. He really won't fit in the Rangers organization, and I see him as the most expendable top five prospect for the Rangers.
Well, let's stay on Robbie Erlin for a second, because are you surprised? And I don't want to go back to Ubaldo Jimenez, but I'm just going to use it as an example. If the Rangers, instead of using Perez, had used Robbie Erlin, do you think this deal gets done?
If I don't know, because I mean, obviously, we're talking about Colorado here, talking about Coors Field. Once again, it's another hitter's park. Maybe they're also concerned if with Erlin, if he's a fly ball pitcher, that it won't work out so well with him. But you know, I don't like going back and just focusing just on Jimenez, but you know, in just the Colorado Rockies. But you know, I just can't imagine him not liking Perez. I really can't.
Well, let's a couple of the guys that I have on my list, and a guy I'm sure that you're absolutely tired of hearing me talk about, and he's a guy that I brought up last night with another friend of mine. He kind of laughed me off, but it was Jeremy Guthrie. Now, I don't know whether you call it a love affair with this Orioles pitcher, but this is a guy that's pitched in the American League East for his entire career since he came up with the Orioles. This is a guy that's pitched against some of the best offense there is with the Yankees, with the Red Sox, and you can even say with the Rays and the Blue Jays over the last couple of years. Now, say what you want about Tampa Bay, and as bad as that city is as far as baseball is concerned, they have put a very good team on the field. So it's And I know his ERA hasn't been great, and I believe he's somewhere in the fours right now. But if you bring him to Texas, you and I both know the AL West is not exactly the strongest division as far as offense. You're going to be pitching against Seattle. You're going to be pitching against Anaheim, who really, aside from Torii Hunter, Vernon Wells, and Bobby Abreu, really doesn't have much. And I think this is a guy that can slide into the number three or number four role and really help the Rangers down the stretch. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I don't have the love affair that you have with him, but you still have him under contract for next year. He'll be arbitration, but he's been putting up solid numbers. He just went off against the Angels, and even though they lost 9-3, he went 7 innings, only gave up 3 runs. So, and then he went strong against Boston before that, 7 innings, 2 runs. So he's a solid guy. Like you said, he's going up against the East every, you know, all the time. The last several seasons, and he's a guy that I would want, and I'm thinking for the playoffs. Some fans out there are thinking, well, our rotation is doing pretty good right now. Well, I'm thinking for the playoffs. I'm thinking we're already going to beat the Angels. We're going to wrap it up. But you need another guy that can go out there and be kind of like a bulldog, be out there and take the reins and against a Boston, against a New York.
Well, and, you know, it's – the argument that I heard yesterday when I brought this up was he has no playoff experience, and this was a Twitter conversation. I forget who brought that up. But I said, well, Kobe Lewis and C.J. Wilson didn't have playoff experience last year. How'd that work out?
That's true. And for fans out there, don't if you get caught up in even looking at somebody who does have playoff experience and what kind of numbers they put up, that those numbers are very arbitrary. I mean, that's just a small little window you're looking at there. You need to look at really what they did in the season. And like you're talking about, going up against the AL East, what did he do against Boston? What did he do against New York this year? And I think he can handle it. His ERA is still, like you said, it's low fours. It's not that bad, but you're looking at somebody that's already in the American League. So if you're looking at a Hiroki Kuroda who has a 3-something ERA in the National League, you almost got to probably bump that up at least another point if he's coming over to the American League. So it wouldn't be that much different.
Well, and another guy that I wanted to bring up, and I could go on Jeremy Guthrie, although I really do like his addition. He's not going to be expensive. The Orioles are looking for a first baseman and an outfielder, at least from what I've been told. Chris Davis could be part of that deal, although I don't know how much Baltimore likes him. You say what you want about Chris Davis, and I didn't want to get on him during this conversation. And you know I like Chris. I've watched Chris since he was at Double A Frisco, and I really do believe that he can succeed, although he hasn't shown anybody that he can yet outside of Triple A. Now, that being said, he is arguably one of the youngest and best defensive first basemen out there. Screw is bad. This guy can grab anything that's near him at first base or even at third base.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he is the gold glove caliber, kind of in the Mark Teixeira realm of defense at first base. And, you know, we've discussed it time and time again on Twitter. And his numbers are off the charts in AAA. They really are. There's nothing like you've ever seen. The only thing that still scares me, and I'm looking for more of like a baseball front office kind of guy, is the 30% strikeout rate. He's still striking out way too often, and I know he had at least one strikeout last night, and there's fans like me that love Chris Davis as a person. I think the world of him as a human being, but I'm just not sold on him as a Major League Baseball player.
Well, another name that I wanted to bring up is Jason Marquis from the Washington Nationals. Now, looking at his numbers, I don't think they're all that bad. In fact, I'm actually pretty impressed with what he's been able to do so far this year. In 20 starts, he's 8-5. He's pitched 120 and two-thirds innings so far. He's got a 3.95 ERA. He's got 8 wins, 5 losses. But looking at his last couple of starts, he's 1-2, but chalked that up to not a whole lot of run support. Against Colorado, he goes 6 innings, 5 hits, 2 earned, walked 4, but the Nationals only give him 1 run in support. His very next start against Houston on the road, they won that game 5-2. 8 innings. 6 hits, 2 earned, 9 strikeouts. The following, here comes the no offense again. Against the Dodgers on the road, 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts. The Nationals give him 1 run. They lose 3-1. So there again, we're talking about a pitcher who doesn't get a lot of offensive help. He's a lot like Jeremy Guthrie. Guthrie does not get a lot of help from his Orioles offense. Jeremy Guthrie coming into a city like Texas and bringing in an offense like the Rangers with Josh Hamilton and Nelson Cruz and Michael Young and Ian Kinsler, getting 5, 6, 7 runs a game, this guy can go from 8 wins to 16 pretty easily, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, Jerry Guthrie, I see him as a quality start kind of guy. Like we mentioned earlier, maybe a 6 innings, 3 runs type thing. Now, Jason Marquis, he's kind of the typical name you hear around the trade deadline. You know, maybe a number four to five pitcher in your rotation. You're kind of more accustomed to hearing those names. The Gibaldo Jimenezes of the world or the Cliff Lees of the world are very rare. And But I agree. I think somebody like Guthrie or somebody like Marquis, you know, come in and you know you're going to get 5 runs every game, then they can go out and pitch maybe 6 innings and give up 3 runs.
Well, another start back on May 31st for Marquis was at home against Philadelphia. Again, the Nationals won 10-2. He got 6 1/3, 8 hits, 2 earned, 4 strikeouts. So, you know, you look at Philadelphia's offense and you look at guys like Ryan Howard, you know, it tells you what kind of offense that Marquis can face and be a strong pitcher. This guy has experience in the National League. He pitched for the Colorado Rockies. He's now with the Nationals in his second season. He's been with Atlanta. But if you look at his career numbers, he really did fairly well with St. Louis. But, I mean, his numbers really aren't that impressive at the end of the season. He's finished with ERA above 5 at least 6 times that I can count. I guess I'm trying to make an argument. If you talk to certain people, they will tell you a National League pitcher cannot come to the American League and have success. But I think with an offense like this and a pitcher like Jason Marquis, I think this is a guy that helps you. He's got veteran experience. He's got playoff experience with the Cardinals. And this is a guy that's really going to help you down the stretch, I think.
Well, I was just thinking about, let's say they bring in a Marquis, and that's really the only starting pitcher they bring in. Is that going to be enough for Ranger fans? Are they going to, you know, scream for the rooftops, hey, we're going to the ALCS or we're going to the World Series based on Jason Marquis? He's great if it's another guy you're bringing in, but him alone, I think fans would be disappointed. Now, if you go out and you talk about this,
keep going, man. Well, Ranger fans, we're going to talk about that. What is enough for you at the trade deadline? So when we come back from the break, Eddie and I are going to break that down, who we want and who you want. Stay tuned. It's Scooping the Texas Rangers. Sorry about that, man. I threw that up on you from out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's all right, man. I was like, whoa, what's happening here, you know? But the first time it happened, you know, it went fine, and we kind of ran through it. But I just stumbled there for a second. But yeah, that was pretty good.
Well, good. So what I want to do is, oh, you know what? Final segment of Scooping the Texas Rangers. I'm your host, Todd Kaufman, alongside Eddie Middlebrook in our last segment of the day. Eddie, I do appreciate you joining me, but let's get to the last little part of this, and we're going to talk about the players that we believe the Rangers will end up acquiring. And before we came back from break, you and I talked about Carlos Beltran. And from what I heard this morning, one report, well, let's talk about the Jason Stark report, because that's something you brought up to me. Because when Stark sent his report out, it said that Beltran would only approve a trade to 7 different National League clubs, and he didn't want to play in the American League because he was afraid he was going to be put in center field, and he didn't have experience with the AL West. Well, the AL West part is BS, and I don't think he said that. But I don't – if the Rangers acquire him, it's to move Josh Hamilton to center field and play Beltran in one of those corner outfield spots. So you tell me, are the Rangers acquiring Beltran, or is it time for us to move on?
I'm still hearing reports that we're still going hard after him, especially after the Beltran injury. As soon as Beltran went down, the immediate thing I thought of was Beltran, and I'm sure that's what the Rangers front office had to be thinking of too. A guy that has a .390, you know, on base percentage, it's just, you know, they don't fall off trees, and Now, I know they're. I'm sure they're concerned about putting Hamilton in center for the rest of the remaining of the season. But I think we've seen even when he's in left field, he's still prone to fall to finding a wall here or two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's. I go back and forth on Beltran. Now, there's no question in my mind that if you acquire Beltran, I mean, look at the kind of lineup you have. If you start Elvis Andrews right off the top, you go to Ian Kinsler. You can swap those two. You can go Kinsler at lead. Elvis Andrews at the second spot, Michael Young at three, Josh Hamilton at four, Carlos Beltran five, Nelson Cruz six, Mitch Moreland seven. I mean, this is an incredible offensive lineup if you add Carlos Beltran to the Texas Rangers.
There's, especially if you go with Napoli at the catcher spot, there is not a single weak link in that order. It would just become almost laughable if you're an opposing team and trying to pitch against that lineup.
Well, in another need that they have, and a lot of people are saying, why are the Rangers going after an outfielder when they have more pressing needs? And those needs are at a starter and as a reliever. Now, the one name that we continue to hear is Heath Bell. Now, as much as I love Bell because I watched him for six – or I forget when he came into San Diego. I think he's in his fourth or fifth year. But he played 2 years behind Trevor Hoffman, and I think he's in his second year as the closer. He is as fiery a guy – as I've ever seen as far as a closer. He is a guy that's animated. He's a guy that is pumped up every time he comes out to the mound, and he is a guy that can get the job done. But every time I look at his name and think he's not going to be here after 3 months, my thought is it's time to move on because I'm not going to give up two or three prospects for a guy that's going to be here for 3 months with no guarantee to re-sign.
It's true. I mean, we all knew when Cliff Lee came here that it more likely would be only for just a few months, but it was Cliff Lee. I mean, one of the top two or three pitchers in the game. And, you know, Heath Bell is the legitimate closer. You can argue that he's maybe definitely top 10, if not even top five. But a closer is still not an ace. And I just don't know if, you know, Ranger fans, and I'm sure Ranger fans would grow to love him over the next couple of months, but I don't know what your sources are telling you, but I think I know he really likes it in San Diego.
And that's Heath has made it clear that he would like to return to San Diego and has even gone as far as to say that he would give them the famed San Diego discount, quote unquote. And I'm getting tired of hearing that phrase because I've heard it ever since I've lived in San Diego. But, you know, and even if he gets traded to Texas, I'm willing to bet he goes back to San Diego after this year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And so if you're San Diego, you know that the Rangers, when they let go of him in the offseason, they're going to get two first-round picks. And so San Diego has to get something to recoup that. You know, not only do they want two solid prospects, but they might even want a third solid prospect.
Well, and here's my thought with Bell, and this is how San Diego could absolutely rip Texas off. Because if they trade Heath Bell and they get two prospects in return, now a San Diego source that I talked to yesterday said that he doesn't believe the Padres will get anything better than two mid-level prospects, but that's just his opinion. But if you land Bell for those two prospects, mid-level or otherwise, you have it for 2 months, you end the season, whether it's as a World Series champion or you lose in the playoffs, he becomes a free agent, re-signs with San Diego, and now look what you've done. You've not only given up two prospects, regardless of who they are, but you've now allowed San Diego to essentially keep Heath Bell and, on top of that, the draft picks. So what did you get?
You get nothing. It's one of those things where when the first time you hear about Heath Bell and you look at his numbers, you start to salivate, you get all excited. But we've heard so much about him now. It gives you more time to think about it. And I'm assuming if we've thought more about it, the Rangers have thought more about it. You know, hopefully they've moved on to maybe a more logical guy to look at.
Well, so let me ask you this. Carlos Beltran, yes or no?
Yes, I still say yes. OPS 900 is, I just, you know, I can't say no to that.
Heath Bell, yes or no?
No.
Yeah, I'm a no there too. If it's me, I am staring down the barrel at Tyler Clippard. I really am. I like what this kid brings. He's 26 years old. He's got a long, long career in front of him. And this is a guy that you can re-sign for 5 or 6 years and only pay probably $2 or $3 million a year. To me, that's worth it.
Oh, yeah. He's the kind of guy, because we all know that the Rangers want to give Feliz a shot at the rotation again next year. And I know the Rangers have been looking at a reliever, not just a rental, but they want somebody for next year and beyond. And Clippard is your guy. He's your guy, like you said. He's young. He's got incredible numbers. He's going to be extremely cheap. Not a free agent until 2016. That's just that could be your closer for the next 3 or 4 years, and we're talking pennies on the dollar. I mean, who are you willing to give up for a Clippard?
Well, according to William Ladson, who is the MLB.com beat writer for the Nationals, I asked him via Twitter yesterday, and what he told me was a great, quote-unquote, great center fielder and a young starting pitcher. Now, I'm not so sure the Rangers have that great outfielder, and the source that I talked to when I explained this information to the source said they're not getting that because there isn't a great center fielder out there, and he's right. So, you know, it's if the Nationals want an outfielder, I'm more than willing to package David Murphy and even put Andy Chavez in that deal. I'm willing to ship both of them, or even Murphy and Gentry off. If you bring in Beltran, I am more than willing to package David Murphy and one of Andy Chavez or Craig Gentry, plus maybe a Tanner Shepherds if you haven't dealt him already.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, of course, when you say they're looking for a great center fielder, you know, I'm really high on Leonis Martin, that name, I would be really hesitant to give him up to the Nationals. But if you're talking about a Craig Gentry, who is a guy that can fill that spot for the Nationals, then I'm hoping then that would suffice. But
well, you and I both know that neither guy is what they term a great outfielder, whether center fielder or otherwise. But I just, like this source told me, the Nationals are not going to get what they're asking for. They're just pushing up the price to see what somebody's going to pay. They need an outfielder. There's no question about that. Now, an interesting scenario came up with San Diego, which is – was it San Diego or was it somebody else? I forget who it was. No, it was the Nationals and Tampa Bay and Texas. Is if you get Tampa involved, the Nationals can get B.J. Upton and get the center fielder that they want and work out a three-way deal where Tyler Clippard does end up in Texas. So really that makes sense to me because the Nationals get their center fielder. The Rangers can ship Tanner Shepherds or another young pitcher, maybe a Robbie Erlin, to Washington, and the Rangers get Tyler Clippard. I think that deal makes sense.
Well, and I'm assuming that in that deal, the Rangers have to give prospects to both Tampa and Washington, and we both know they have the prospects to do it. They're one of only probably two or three teams out there that are buyers that can do something like that.
Yeah, I think that's – and that was an interesting scenario when I was told that. And that made a whole lot of sense because it gives the Nationals what they want. It gives the Rangers what they want. And I don't know that Tampa Bay is going to ask for more than a couple, you know, mid-level prospects for B.J. Upton. I doubt that they're going to want top prospects in return. So I think that deal makes a lot of sense.
Well, and I know I've seen on the message boards and stuff like that that some Ranger fans are talking about B.J. Upton. I just don't see him fitting with the Rangers. He's not a Beltran in the sense that he's not coming in with a lot of power. He struggles with strikeouts, stuff like that. So we already have a Leonis Martin that's kind of waiting in the wings to come step up and be that center fielder. Upton doesn't fit us, but, I mean, he would more than fit the Nationals.
Well, here's how the trade deadline goes, and this is what makes me laugh. We talked about Hiroki Kuroda saying that he doesn't want to go to the East Coast, and now he's keeping his options open. Colby Rasmus was a guy that a lot of teams wanted, and St. Louis said absolutely not, we're not trading, and now they're talking to the White Sox about Colby Rasmus. And Ryan Ludwig is an outfielder that had an okay time in St. Louis, but now the Padres wanted, you know, a couple mid-level prospects and may not get any more than a low-A prospect because really Ryan Ludwig hasn't done squat in San Diego. So that's how the trade deadline goes, because teams are going to say, we want this, this, and this. Other teams say, you got to be out of your mind. And then things change just hours before the deadline comes up. So whatever we're hearing now, either that asking price is going to go up or it's going to go down depending on who's in the race.
It is, and it's all about who blinks first in some cases. Teams are kind of weighing their options. I know me and you both, we're kind of, you know, the trade deadline, this has been real quiet so far, and all the fans are itching for something to happen. Kepinger being, you know, traded from the Astros doesn't exactly, you know, get fans all excited, or, you know, even K-Rod a couple weeks ago, it's already been a couple weeks. So you know, we're all looking for something to happen, but sometimes it has to wait until the final deadline to really force one of the teams to cave.
Well, and to wrap things up, we've already said yes to Beltran. We've said no to Bell. Are you going to agree with me on Tyler Clippard?
I'm right there with you. Yep.
All right, so now the only thing we need is a starter. Now, I don't know. It seems like Hiroki Kuroda is the guy that they want. They've already been rebuked by Colorado for Jimenez, and I don't think there's any other names that they're really after at this point as far as a starter, although we didn't hear Cliff Lee's name until the absolute last minute. So really, we don't know exactly what other names they could be after, but let's start with the yes or no. If they can work out a deal for Ubaldo Jimenez, yes or no?
Yes. Yep, I'm on board.
Yes or no to Kuroda? If you had the choice between Kuroda and Jimenez, which one?
It's Jimenez. Yeah. But the only reason I even say yes on Kuroda is if it has to be a lower deal than Jimenez. If you're giving up a Joe Wieland instead of a Robbie Erlend or a Martin Perez, then I'm way more for that.
So right now we've got Carlos Beltran, Tyler Clippard, and Ubaldo Jimenez. I think that's a pretty good haul for three players. And I think that's a combination that gets you, if not to the World Series, pretty darn close.
It does. It puts you because we already got it. We also have to think, what are the Red Sox going to do? What are the Yankees going to do? This is an arms race. You just can't sit idly by, and that would be the worst thing in the world if the Rangers just sat there and did nothing.
Well, what a Monday afternoon this has been. Eddie, I really do appreciate you joining me. Give your Twitter handle out. Where can they find you?
They can find me at eMiddlebrook, twitter.com/eMiddlebrook.
Well, Eddie, I appreciate you joining me. You can find him again on Twitter at twitter.com/eMiddlebrook. You can find me at twitter.com/T_Kaufman and on Facebook as well. For Scooping the Texas Rangers, for myself, Todd Kaufman, for Eddie Middlebrook, we'll see you on the flip side. So long.